This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 23rd of April, 1959. The title of this lecture is Present Time. This tape is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
How are you today?
Well, it's like you're doing well. Today, I'm going to talk to you about a thing called present time. This is a subject. Present time is a subject. It has many ramifications. And a Scientologist who doesn't know about present time isn't in it. The concept of a time track is something that you will be living with for some time. A time track is roughly a concatenation of experiences plotted against time, or a series of experiences plotted against time. That's all. It is not a mock-up of a thin line with little rails on it. That's a dub-in track. People do not see their time track as a whole. They usually see it incident by incident. But you become aware of somebody's time track very easily by running ARC straight wire, and you'll find them going back in time, and then up to present time, and then further back in time, and then up to present time, and then usually further back in time, then up to present time, and sometimes just a little bit back in time and up to present time. They're going actually into other time periods and then recovering this time period. And what they are seeing and experiencing is their time track. Now, when too many overt acts, which are too hidden, and which are too collapsed with motivators, occur, we get a thing known as a grouped track, which merely means too many incidents are apparently in one piece of time. Too many incidents are in one piece of time. That's what a grouper is. Now, somebody can have on his track, it's all coming in on me at once as merely a symbol, a symbolized statement, which is engramic, which is other determined to him, and which makes him believe that that's his determinism, and his track will tend to group. Now, that is a phenomenon simply of too many incidents apparently occurring at the same instant in time. In other words, it's an absence of time. Now, a grouper, basic rationale of, is simply absence of time. That's the simplest statement. It apparently gets grouped mechanically or forcefully, and there are tremendous forces involved in some of these groupers. Groupers can be induced in various ways, you know, make time vanish in various ways, by just terrific duress. You throw a great deal of duress against an individual who himself has a great many overt acts, and you get an overt act motivator sequence of such severity that it results in a grouper. All times appear to be that time. But basically, it is an absence of time, isn't it? Single source of aberration is time. Conditions of time, aberrations concerning time, and so on. And mechanically, these are best explained by the overt act motivator sequence. An individual tries to turn his time backwards on this rationale. He walked up to a little child, picked up an axe, split the child's head in half. Now, he tries to explain that by saying it happened to him. Well, later on, it will probably happen to him. He'll get himself into some sort of an arrangement whereby he gets hit over the head with an axe. And then he'll say this came first, which gives him a reason for having hit the child over the head with an axe. And he'll flip his time. You'll see this many times. Now, this we call the dead-dedex sequence, which is a specialized case where the individual does something and then afterwards has it done to him. It's illogical that he would do this to anybody unless it were done to him first, you see? So he makes it logical by flipping the time. He says incident A comes after incident B, where, as a matter of fact, it's quite the reverse. Incident A is where he hit the child over the head with an axe. Incident B, he got hit over the head with an axe. So he says, well, incident B came first. I was hit over the head with an axe. And after that, I had a compulsion to hit people over the head with an axe. This thing is all tailored up so that he believes it and hopes everybody else does and so forth. And the result is a source of groupers. But just an ordinary overt act motivator sequence can be a grouper. The effort to say it didn't happen or it happened some other way at some other time is best expressed by the individual in trying to make it come out differently by time rearrangements. And about the easiest thing for him to attack, change around, mess up, is time. About the easiest thing for him to make disappear is time. For instance, nearly everybody has some time-space identification. He says, well, it's now 4 hours to Los Angeles by jet. See? Not 3,600 miles, it's 4 hours. He says, he says it was a long way. It took many days on the boat. See? Time, space. In other words, space is measured by time. The world is said to be getting smaller because you can get around it so much quicker. This is all very silly, you see. But there is an apparency of more space where there is more time. But this can get inverted, and it can get very badly mishmashed because any identification can become inverted and then disassociate, you see. People just don't identify and then just hold the identification. They identify harder and harder, and then it begins to be different again. You realize that? I mean, identifications spring about into disassociation. You can get somebody, by the way, who is so crazy that they are totally disassociating. Someday you will run into somebody who is totally disassociating. It takes a pretty sane person to talk gobbledygook to you on disassociation, or a totally insane one. You know, it was shortly after the submarine got all the air out of its spokes, you see, that they buried the chrysanthemums. You see, it's gobbledygook. All right. Now, at the same time, an individual who's totally identified goes into gobbledygook obsessively. He's obsessively trying to differentiate. And he talks about the submarines and the beer and thinks it's perfectly logical. It's quite a trick to get your mind to disassociate. It's a rather uncomfortable frame of mind to be in, that you can disassociate at will. You walk up to some serious-minded fellow and start talking to him about letting all the air out of the spokes and so forth, and he's liable to give you the eye. It makes him very uncomfortable. It's well outside of his realm of ability to disassociate like this. And as a matter of fact, he slightly fears disassociation. Got the idea? So just as people can identify and then disassociate on a subject, so this other one can come up. Another one can come up now, which is to say they can identify times and then disassociate times. They say, well, as a matter of fact, there was a great many things happened in that particular day, so they say one of them happened in their childhood. See, it's just one day they're talking about, and so many things happened, and that happened in their childhood, they say. See, they've disassociated things on their time track. So not only can a track group, but it can disperse. And you will run into PCs who have spattered tracks, an old clown phrase that we used, have used for years. We call them buttered all over the universe. It's an everywhere case. This fellow is everywhere, all at different times, which are the same time. You see, it's just a case of time disassociation. Time, evidently for most people, is a little bit difficult to be at the cause point over. They take as long as they take. Time is another determinism. When they are going through a certain operation, they do not make it faster or shorter. Now, that, of course, is the butt end of nowhere, because just doing something faster and doing something shorter, quicker, in an effort to change time, of course, is in itself somewhat nonsensical, since time is basically a sequence or series of incident, or a sequence or series of occurrence. That's all time is. And in Dianetics 55, you'll find a one-shot clear command in there, make some time. Or run it on somebody sometime. You're liable not to get an answer for the first hour or two. He'll tell you all sorts of things like, well, I could do this, and it might be possible to do that, but he isn't answering the auditing question, just make some time. Now, to excuse various misdemeanors, to explain away his life, to occlude many unhappy circumstances, to avoid the responsibility of having done as many dastardly deeds as he has did, an individual attacks time. He rearranges, groups, does things with time. This you'll run into. It's a headache. It's a headache in a PC. You start running ARC straight wire. He has no concept of any differences in time. You say to him, when was that? He says, well, something time I communicated with somebody. Well, that's, I think that was, yes, I've got one. And you say, well, when was it? And he said, well, I think it was in the, let's see, it's last year's, no, it was the first, down the corner, no, it's not tomorrow, I know that. You see, time is so other determined to this person that he can't place anything. Well, now, the magic of placing something in time is magic. You take an E-meter. You know, many auditors believe that an E-meter should remain a secret to the PC. That's a magic box, and the PC mustn't see it, you know. Let the PC see his own E-meter. Don't let him look at his E-meter while he's trying to spot something, or he will run a race with the needle. Yes, he will. He'll try to regulate his answers so as to get needle drops. And he flies out of the auditor's control. He goes into contest with the needle. But if you found something that dropped very severely and you're looking at it, there is nothing at all wrong with saying, well, that sure dropped. Or showing him the needle just for a glance, you know. Say, look at that. Look at that. Show him the needle, and then you say, priestess or something. And it says, glong, glong, glong. He says, what do you know? What do you know? He says, so that's what I thought. What do you know? Similarly, the magic of locating an engram which has been afloat down to a few minutes in the time stream is great enough to make it disappear in present time and go back to its proper time slot. So you start running over and under on some sort of an incident, somebody, as I will talk about later, and getting this thing bracketed in time. You bracket it right on down. May the 13th, 2:13 p.m., 1562. Clang! The incident just slams itself back on the track, just like that. It disappears. You have a PC who is just floundering and, oh, he's just having a dreadful time. He's trying to run some straight wire process and he keeps getting locked up in an incident. ARC break straight wire is the greatest offender in this. And just to recall, an ARC break is the total command. It's a sort of a process that's used amongst Scientologists more than on the public. It has a great deal of use, and it also has its own liabilities. You can get back down the track while being run on this thing and start flashing and trying to yell for help and going on through an incident, you know, engram. He goes through and just recall an ARC break, you know, and for an hour just flounder on through. The headsman's axe comes down, only it may or may not be a headsman's axe, and there's a horrible pain, and you run on through and you recall another ARC break, and it's all in the same incident. You get the idea? And actually, somebody's trying to make you run an engram with recall an ARC break. You can get stuck in these engrams and just flounder on. You eventually come through on the other side, but it's awfully uncomfortable. Actually, the proper action on the part of an auditor when he sees you getting into very, very heavy weather of it on the track someplace is to find out when and find it out with great accuracy. And that alone will cause the incident usually to go back to its own place on the time track. It's quite magical. Now, time and the time track is the basic mechanical thing back of aberration. The various significances of aberration, such as this fellow thinks he's a chicken, and therefore so on and so. Or this other chap has an enormous aversion to girls, or something like that, you know. That's the particularity. Now, when we go locating it, it is an incident on the time track that is causing the situation. But just under that is there must be something wrong with time and this person to have his incidents this mishmashed. Well, the fact of the matter is you have to straighten out a lot of incidents before an individual gets up to a point where he can tackle just time, or conceive of time just as itself, or conceive of being causative about time. You start asking Preclear, who is 10 plunges deep into he spent 12 lifetimes as a hangman, and then he got hanged, you see? And, boy, he's so mixed up in the particularities of the smell of hemp. He's so busy cogniting on why he never wore neckties. He is so fascinated with all the peculiarities and betrayals and everything else that went on along this line, that if you were to ask him, now, could it be your sense of time which is out, he's liable to pick up the chair and throw it at you if he could move. You see, this is much too simple. Now, you've thrown a simplicity at him which is so simple that in the duress he finds himself in, too much confusion blows off too quick. And he just can't handle the confusion. He just goes right into the confusion more. You see? That's too simple. Nevertheless, it is the basic modus operandi behind why engrams get in restimulation and why PCs keep them mocked up and clutched to their bosoms and all this sort of thing. It's time. Time. Something wrong with time. Now, it isn't the time is wrong. It is always the individual's regard for time, or attitude toward time, or his opinions about time, or something. You'll find time gets a person into a lot of trouble. If you fail to report sometime at the time you were supposed to report, you know that there was something said about it, you see. Also, it's very easy to blame time, you see. And this individual has an atomic-powered multicellular bio-spectroscope with which he can look at the progress and course of the spaceships of his shipping company, and he sees one going hell-bent into a black planet. Now, if he just had time, he could send them a message. But he hasn't got time, so it's all time. That's the fault of time, you see. He blames time. Once more, he makes time other determined to him. And people are always saying this, if I just had more time, you know, time's fault, sort of, they're implying, that I don't get more things done. If there was just more time, I'd get more things done. Whereas anybody can conduct an idiotically simple experiment. Just get busy someday and see how much time there is in the day. Get very busy. Not very long ago, I got extremely busy, very, very busy, and did, 30 or 40 things in the space of maybe an hour and a half, and got them all wrapped up, and everything was squared away. And thought, well, isn't that nice now? I can get down to the office and get today's work done, you know. The weirdest thing, I was riding through the park, and, that was a long ride. It was just a very long ride, that's all, you see. It was very long. Quote, it took an awfully long time to get through the park, unquote. Just my concept of how long it took to go through the park had been stretched because I'd gotten very busy and gotten a lot of things done, you see. I was, in effect, in life, making time. So therefore, time, there appeared to be more of it. You sometimes see some fellow sitting behind a desk saying, well, I'm just so under pressure all the time, and if I just had more time, and if I could just get things done, and so on, and I can't because I don't have more time. Watch him carefully. He doesn't get a single thing done. That's one of the wildest things. You can point this out to him. Well, look, if you just do something except sit there and moan about this, why, you'd find out you'd have broken the dike. But he never will. He just keeps on moaning about how he doesn't have any time to get anything done. Actually, the day appears very brief to him. Very brief. Hardly enough hours in the day to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Time, then, is subject to different considerations. It is subject to upset. It's subject to various mechanical behaviors, such as appearing to be totally grouped or totally dispersed. The idea of a black screen that you very often run into in a PC is simply a grouper in operation of one type or another. It's curtained out his reality. Well, you say that's very simple. He's curtained out his reality. What's the finest way in the world to curtain out reality? To say there was no time track on which it could exist. Now, wouldn't that be one of the finest things you could wipe out reality with? You say, well, it never happened. Automatically, there is no time, right? So there's no time for that span? Well, voila, we have solved it. Eureka, QED, and other Spanish expressions. Individuals not got anything to look at, which proves that that time never existed, you see? There he is. You say, look at your bank. Look at your bank. Yeah, yeah. When he gets a little worse off, you say, look at your time track, and he gets a thread out here with some little cross ties on it. It's all tabulated very nicely. When he's really got it nailed down, Why, he has some facsimiles, all right, and if you look down in the lower left-hand corner of them, something like that, why, you'll see the date written out. Sometimes the date is in Roman letters. It takes a little figuring for him to read the date. You ask this chap, when? When was that? And he says, just a moment. You make the mistake of believing he's thinking. He's not. He's trying to read the date off the bottom of the facsimile. It's fact. I mean, this is a true case. Somebody that you ask when will sit there, and you say, well, he's trying to orient it. You know, he's trying to... No, he's not. He's waiting for a little cuckoo that appears out here and says, the time is now 1536 A.D. Total dub-in. He'd be the first one to ask you, doesn't everybody have a little cuckoo that does this? It's like the PC, you ask him for an answer in the little railroad car. Cars run around from in back of his head on a cute little track, and there's a sign in each car. And one word per car. And all the little cars go by, and he reads off the proper answer to the question. That's all dub-in reality. He finds it's intolerable to live without that time span he has actually experienced. So he just dubs in another one on total substitution. It hasn't anything to do with the price of fish. You'll find the phenomenon that in some life, an individual has dub-in, and in another life won't have. It's quite interesting. An individual from life to life gets varying states of sanity, varying states of reality. It depends on his environment, how often the environment's repeated. Let us say he had a life in Greece, stark, staring mad. And he got some sense into his head, and he went to Gaul, and he lived very happily in Gaul for a number of lifetimes, and then he dropped something in the wrong slot and wound up back in Greece. That life wasn't so good, you see. And then he goes, he says, well, that was all for the Greeks. And he lives a nice, beautiful life up on the Volga, boating along, and everything is happy. And he lives another life up in the amongst the Eskimos, and he lives another life over in Poland. And he's getting along all right. And then drops the wrong penny in the slot and winds up back in Greece again. About this time, it's getting pretty dubby. He wants nothing to do with Greece. Every time he gets to Greece, why, they massacre him. Something bad happens to him, and it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And he may have perfectly sane lives, as far as you can tell, all up and down the track, interspersed with areas of total dub. There'll be a life, the life from 1275 to 1352, it's just a total dub-in the whole way. But the life in the latter part of the 14th century, nothing to it. It's perfectly sane. He's doing well. You say, what's this all about? Well, you have actually run into a similarity of lives. These Greek lives will eventually tend to jam independent of lives he's led elsewhere. You could eventually say to this fellow, Earn, or even as disassociated as Keats, you know, and the E-meter start falling off of its pin. Anything that even vaguely connected with Greece. Anything. And you'll have this thing occurring. You've got his lowest level of reality. It's a good thing to tackle, by the way. In a case, clears up rather rapidly. Now, there is where an individual has one type of time track with another type of time track. You see, he's evidently got two time tracks. One, he's got a dub-in track, and the other, he's got a real track. And the dub-in track, of course, is in total occlusion before you finally get it into any level of reality. His time track is liable to go into various segments. Now, worse than that, his time track is liable to just totally ball up into another valence and a time track he never lived. He just never lived this time track at all. It's the time track as seen by somebody that he had a fight with sometime or another or something of the sort. He just done a valence flip, and he's in another valence, and a wonderful way of as-ising any experience and time he had, isn't it? He just isn't that person. See, right on the track, he does what he does every life. He picks up another body and becomes somebody else. Well, now he just deepens the mechanism, and he is in somebody else's valence and has never been himself. So therefore, QED, Eureka, he doesn't have his own time track anymore, so nothing hurts, of course. He just parked someplace in time, isn't he? In other words, he goes off of his own track out of valence. He starts getting everything with a detached view. You ask him to get a picture of himself, and he's always over there. He's always seeing himself from some other viewpoint. This is the first mechanism that you run into that has anything to do with this. That doesn't mean that he is in another valence in that time, though. It means that he's just dubbing track from some other valence viewpoint someplace else on the track. You got the idea? All right. Now, if you understand something of this mechanism, that a person does have a series of experiences plotted against time, he has lived them, he has lived through them, and those are his, and they will always be his, but that he does peculiar and odd things about them to make them vanish. Such a mechanism of saying they never existed, such a mechanism of being somebody else who didn't have that time track, you see? Such a mechanism of saying, well, past lives don't exist. It's just another mechanism of disowning a time track. And you get these complex views. But this must never disturb your definition of a time track, because the time track we're defining has not ceased to exist. Kind of interesting, but that time track has not ceased to exist just because he's taking up other mechanisms to defeat it. He's still got this time track. Still there. I'm afraid he never wins in getting rid of one. And the only way, basically, they can ever get clear of a time track is to confront it and experience it. If he's unwilling to confront it and experience it, all other mechanisms are not his mechanisms. He's trying to not his this track, and he has all sorts of weird ways of doing it. And they are the ways of the reality scale, of course. They go down to simply confront it. That's all right. He has pictures. They're not very real, usually, as pictures. He can see his time track. They're just pictures, though, he carefully reassures you. Into invisibility, into blackness, into a total substitute track, and this can disassociate on substitution almost ad infinitum. Now, this individual is drawing away from time, isn't he? As he begins to handle a time track more and more incorrectly, right? He's trying not to have anything to do with the time through which he has lived. He's trying desperately to come off of that. And you're auditing him. You're putting him back on it. A person who is on a time track can move on the time track. He can certainly move on an auditor's determinism. That is the easiest thing in the world to have happen. A person who can move at all can be moved by an auditor much more easily, usually, than he can move himself. You are in a position of greater power with regard to his time track than he is any day of the week. You can say, the pre-clear will now move to 1599, July 3rd, 4 o'clock. He can't help himself. He usually just moves there. Similarly, you can also utter a very magic command, which is, come to present time, which ought to be used more often. You could walk through an insane asylum and stop every patient you met in the corridors and say to them, just look at them, say, come up to present time. Thank you. And go to the next one that you meet. Come up to present time. Thank you. Just go through the whole place like that. You know, you would have taken a certain percentage of cases into total, from total insanity to sanity. And they would be quite miraculous, and nobody'd be able to understand this great magic that you had exerted if they didn't know about time tracks. You can tell a person to come to the present time, and he does. This was done one day as an actual experiment. And that evening, one of the girls that had been addressed, that had been, quote, incurable case, unquote, got up and made a speech to the assembled patients how nice it was to be there. Quite interesting. Now, this is well worth knowing, that you can simply say to somebody, come up to present time and do things, that its percentage of workability is small. There's no reason you should forget it. Maybe in an insane asylum, it wouldn't be more than 2 or 3%. But look, that's worth remembering, 2 or 3%. You see? Now, people who are not in insane asylums, maybe it might work as often as, I don't know what the percentage would be, but it might work 35, 40, 50%, somewhere in that range. Some fellow's going down the street and he's having a terrible time because he's got arthritis and they're afraid he'll make him Secretary of State or something. And he's going down the street and he's having a terrible time and so forth. And you come along to him, you say, come up to present time, and he hasn't got arthritis. In some percentage of cases, that would occur. Well, you see, that's a piece of magic that's worth remembering. He just simply moves out of the engram that he's stuck in and comes up to PT. Now, before you think up too many complex ways to run engrams, look at the first and simplest, which is come up to present time. Now, there's another way of tackling the same thing that we call havingness. Havingness can have many aspects, and this isn't the total aspect of havingness, but it's certainly very germane to this. Objective havingness is another way of saying come up to PT. There's more to it than that, but it gets the individual up to PT. By doing what? By letting him find the walls and find present time. This was efficacious enough that an old foundation member, long, long ago, made it quite a point in some articles in the book, made it quite a point that this was really something. It really isn't too much. It's called TR10, is the actual drill, and it's just notice that. And you notice that it's a TR, not a CCH or a general process. That's because it'll often turn on somatics that only it will turn off, and you're in for about an 80, 90-hour run on TR10, where a lot of other things could do a lot more for the PC. But it's just a mechanism of coming up to present time. Have him notice it. When an individual is too thoroughly stuck in an engram, or when he hasn't been told to move in time, noticing the environment, however, sometimes does not move him in time. In fact, most of the time, it doesn't move him in time. So therefore, TR10 is no great answer. Havingness has other ramifications. Running, look around here and find something you have, just that and no more, also has the side effect of moving somebody into PT. It also has other effects. It gives him mass, makes him aware of mass, gives him reach, does other things. But it has this little portion of it over here, brings the individual to some degree up to PT, you see? So it's this moving up to PT, or moving on the time track, that causes a cyclic aspect of somatics that you so often see in a PC. Individual's first got a pain here, and then he's got a pain here, and then he's got a pain down here. Well, the truth of the matter was, what happened was somebody hit him over the head, and then ran into him with a horse, and then later on ran across his legs with the same horse. You see? And you move him into different portions of time track, and there in a space of maybe a minute and a half or a minute. He has three serious illnesses, which could be called migraine headache, asthma, and multiple sclerosis. It's just where he's parked in that incident. It's where he's at the moment, you see. Now, an auditor can move him back and forth in the incident at will. So an auditor could actually turn on multiple sclerosis, asthma, or migraine headache at will in a PC. He could choose what part of the incident to move him into. The PC would get the somatics or duress of the incident, and he'd have some illness that could be described medically. Quite amazing. You move somebody into a time when he's very sick with a fever, and if you get him thoroughly embedded in the area, he'll develop a fever. You can put a thermometer in his mouth. He has a fever. Well, this just kills doctors. When they observe this one, they say, what? A fever without physiological or bacteriological cause? Oh, no. You'd better get that patient to bed. Now, you just run him a little further through the same incident up to a time when he was well. He doesn't have a fever. Stick a thermometer in his mouth, take his temperature. He doesn't have a fever. You see? All the odd tricks here of positioning somebody on the time track. Because when you position them in a point, at a point, or during a period when things were totally other determined as far as they were concerned, and they had no determination at all, they suffer totally from the duress. And that duress expresses itself mentally and physiologically. Voices speak to them. Pains occur to them. Any one of 53 perceptics can happen all over again. And if the other determinism is extreme, why, they won't be able to keep their head, for instance, from going back. Weird thing. You can do some odd things with this. You can put a person exactly at the instant he was inoculated with a needle and watch the flesh go down. Well, but there's no muscles that make his flesh go down like that, you see. It's just an engram. If you've ever seen somebody in a sperm sequence writhing on the bed, you know very well there aren't sufficient joints in the human body to permit any human body to wiggle in that fashion. There are neither muscles nor joints that would wiggle, make a body wiggle in that fashion. It's fascinating to the number of muscular reactions and physical reactions and so on. To say nothing of the sounds, to say nothing of the smells and so forth. There's one fellow we had last ACC. He located himself on the track, but he could smell it. He smelled his way up and down the time track. He knew it was real because he could smell it. And this was his total perceptic that he was traveling on. Sort of running up and down the track on his nose. I had a lady come to me one time. She was terribly upset. She said that this was so drastic and so ghastly that she didn't want to tell anybody about it and all that sort of thing. But she was smelling dead cattle all the time. She just smelled these cattle all the time. Well, there was some kind of a mix-up on cattle and cattle dying out in the pasture and that sort of thing. All I got her to do was just to create the smell of decaying cattle for a little while, and she no longer smelled it. But she'd been going around smelling that for a couple of years. Now, I could possibly just as easily have said to her, well, move to the time when you got to the house. And the smell would have turned off. See, the smell was there in the field where the cattle were dead, and she was evidently stuck in the field in the mental image picture. It was a mental image picture of a field full of dead cattle, and they smelled. And she was still smelling them. And the realest thing about it is she couldn't confront all those nice cattle being dead, so she could, but she still was smelling them. Get the idea? So awfully complex and hard to understand and all messed up and twisted up significances and manifestations and so on, all stem from this. It's just position in time, position in incident. And you just think of an incident, see? You just think of an incident. Just say, well, fellow runs out here and don't worry. All right, fine. What somatics would he have? All right. Now imagine that fellow as a PC 200 years afterwards. See, here he is, 200 years hence. He's forgotten all about the lorry. He, at no time, apparently has a clue about all this, but he has heart trouble. That's what he says. He tells you he has heart trouble. Well, that's his error. That's just dub-in. The truth of the matter is he has a pain in the vicinity of his heart. That's much more accurate, isn't it? Now, what caused it? Well, you could fish around on an E-meter, and you'd finally find a lorry. Possibly be associated with what he was doing, and it might not be too closely associated. Maybe this fellow's a lorry driver now, you see. And he's just got through wrecking a lorry himself, or running over a pedestrian. And after that, he has this pain in his heart. Well, it isn't enough just to find out that pain. What if he rolled over and over and got up and staggered and fell down, hit his head on the curb? So you could have moved him up about 35 seconds in the incident, and he would have had a headache, not heart trouble. You get the idea. So the significances of what is physically wrong with a person or what he's experiencing give you a myriad of complexities which you just would never be able to wander through except in terms of tremendous cataloging. You'd have to have an illness for every cell in the body, for every way a cell could get ill. So it's just this tremendous, vast... Now multiply it by 53 perceptions, and you'd have various facets of the illness, you see. Yeah, think of a poor medico. Look at what he was slogging into here. Look at the complexity. How many incidents could an individual... Or could anyone or all people have, you see? How many types of incident, how many types of pains then could he have? You know, if you took out 100 fellows and threw them off a cliff, one after the other, they would all wind up with different injuries. One fellow had hurt his ankle, another fellow had hurt his head, another fellow had hurt his arm. So it isn't even enough to say, well, what this fellow's suffering from is falling off a cliff, see? Every time you start to get into the significances of injury or the significances of chronic somatics or something like that, you're just into too many significances. It is too much. What you have to find out is when. Get right down to that fundamental, when. Now you're getting someplace, you see. He might not appreciate it totally. That you're getting any place. When? What do you mean, when? Well, when did something happen to your head? When? Well, I'm talking about nothing happened to my head. I'm telling you I have a headache. You see, you're not allowed to get much cooperation at first. But you say, when did you have something happen? There it is on the meter now. What did you think of? Well, I wasn't thinking about my head. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about my little cousin's head. Yes, time I hit it with a hockey stick. And you say, well, when was that? Oh, well, that's a long time ago. Got out of that. You say, when was it? Oh, well, we needn't go into that. I came in here with a headache. It's all better. Ow! What are you doing to me? All I'm doing is asking you a simple question of when. Now we get it located in time on the E-meter. When he hit somebody with a hockey stick, actually... You'll do a flick-flack, overt, motivator, dead-dead-x, something will happen with regard to the thing. Tell a person now, come up to present time, he's liable to be missing a headache, you see. Very often things will clear up merely with two-way calm. Very often things will simply clear up by locating them in time. That's all. More rarely, they will clear up simply by telling the individual to come to PT. We understand something about this track now and how it affects people? Yes. All right. Well, then let's look at this PT factor. What is PT to the preclear? What's present time to this preclear? If you took 100 fellows and threw them off a cliff, a few of them would have that as PT for a long time. The moment of impact at the bottom of a cliff would be present time. Oh, yeah, maybe they'd be walking around the village and all that sort of thing, but present time would be at the bottom of the cliff. But what do you know? Maybe a large percentage of them wouldn't have that as PT. Well, they wouldn't get stuck there at all. They get stuck somewhere else in the incident, or they wouldn't get stuck at all. It's whether or not it added up to their composite of experience. It's whether or not it added in the right way to add up to their own overts and so forth as to whether or not it got into restimulation and stuck. God help the Russians. They go out and they try to brainwash somebody by giving him a lot of motivators. Nah. You can't brainwash anybody by giving him motivators. Man is a sponge for punishment. The only reason he's stuck on the track at all, he probably has not gotten as many things in the teeth as he has put in other people's teeth. Now, if we regard this principle of present time properly, we will conceive of present time as that moment which you and I agree we are in now. That moment which you and I agree we are in. But for purposes of processing, any point where the individual is stuck on the time track or grouped on the time track, and any grouper, by the way, has one particular time point, which is the grouper. You find that the grouper starts to fly apart. Even though all time is grouped, it's grouped on something. It's grouped on a moment in time. We can regard that instant in time where he is stuck as a present time to him. That to him is, to some degree, present time. That's the PC's present time. And the more he is stuck on the track, the less he is in real present time, and the more he is in some other, according to him, present time. Now, he's really not out of present time when he's stuck in an incident. He's in a present time, the incident. That's the present time he's in. Now, for purposes of processing, you can treat any incident as a present time. And in watching a PC run through an incident, you must not neglect this fact that as far as he is concerned, the incident he is running through is present time. And you are just a foggy distance away, let me tell you. You're a long way out. And you say, well, what's he looking like that for? And how does he look so different? And what's all this about? After all, he's sitting right in the chair. Why can't I just talk to him? Well, you can't talk to him because it's hard to get a man who is being beheaded to hear you. First place, he's about to lose his ears, and there's very many reasons why. From the auditor's present time viewpoint, he has a body in a chair. There's a body sitting in a chair. Yeah, but where's the PC? Where's the PC? He's in the point in time the auditor put him in. That's where he is. So you actually audit across a span of time as well as 2 or 3 feet of distance. So therefore, when a person is finished with an incident, or you're finishing with the session, it's a very, very good thing to tell him to come to present time, isn't it? Now I'll tell you something else. It's a little trick. When he gets there, say hello. He always feels, to some slight degree, that he's been on a journey. He's been away, but he's not been here. And a PC can sometimes become peeved with you because you aren't apparently glad to see him after he came back. No ARC with him, obviously. You weren't glad to see him when he arrived. Arrived, he was just sitting in the chair, wasn't he? And he was sitting in the chair before, and he's sitting in the chair. No, he wasn't. He was in some other present time before, and you've called him back to this agreed upon present time, and he likes to have that fact noted. One, call him back to PT, and two, tell him hello. It's an interesting mechanism. Now, when an individual comes back to PT, it takes him some time to get back to present time from where he is. Now, maybe this is only 3 seconds. Maybe it is only 15 seconds. Maybe it is only 30 seconds. But it is some time. You can tell if an individual didn't very easily. You say, come to present time. He says, okay, and opens his eyes. He's right in the instant. Now, what do you do to keep from evaluating for him? Well, the best thing to do is to run a little havingness on him getting back up to PT covertly, because you knew he didn't arrive. He didn't travel on any track to get here, so you know now he isn't here. You'll see this while you're examining some incident. You'll tell the individual, come to present time, you'll say. He'll say, okay, and open his eyes. Now, factually, it takes a few seconds. Now, don't get impatient with him. It can take as 10 or 15 minutes. But also, don't let him hang around like that to some degree. Keep tabs with him. Because he can actually wind up in some other incident someplace and go flying out the window practically, and you wouldn't know about it at all. You see? So if he's taking a long time to come back to present time, you check on his progress. Well, where are you now? Well, I'm all right. I'm good. Now you can leave that. Well, come on to something else now. Come on up to PT. Coax him up there. He'll get there. It's quite a trick. Actually, it's a very bad thing to leave a pre-clear totally out of PT at the end of session. It's an unkind thing to do. And almost any process you run may throw him out of PT to such a degree that he is out of PT in some private PT of his own at end of session. And he walks out and misses the door and hits the wall and that sort of thing. So it's unkind of you, factually. It is unkind of you not to tell him to come back to present time. Okay? So much for present time. Thank you.